Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast, brought to you by Martin Guitars and Carlton Cases. I am your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, our music is by the one and only John Rauhaus. So the Milk Carton Kids, believe it or not, put out Prologue, that first record that we all listened to 10 years ago. I don't know if it feels like it should be longer than 10 years or shorter. We kind of discussed that during this interview, but they're celebrating their 10th anniversary with a 3-LP box set that's completely remastered and has a bunch of cool new things. And I figured that was as good an excuse as any to reach out to Kenneth Pattingale and Joey Ryan and get them on the show. So they are talking to us about the making of Prologue back in the day, the making of this box set, and also what they're up to in general right now. It sounds like a new Milk Carton Kids record is in the works or about to be in the works. It's a fun chat. I love talking to these guys. I've interviewed them a couple times before. There's a YouTube interview floating around. We've had them in the magazine proper. And every chance I get, I love touching base with them and hearing what they're up to. I can't get enough of their music. Fretboard Journal's 48th issue with Julian Lage on the cover is available right now. You can get that wherever you get your finer guitar magazines. It's at guitar stores around the country, as well as some bookstores. Our 49th issue is going to press in just a couple of weeks, so be on the lookout for that. And our 50th issue is going to be coming out right around the beginning of 2022, and I am pulling out all the stops for that one and doing a bit of a redesign and having some fun. So I hope everybody will join us and subscribe to it if you haven't yet. If you can go to fretboardjournal.com. I'll even give you the discount code podcast. That takes $5 off of your order. In other news, the Fretboard Journal has a bunch of other podcasts: Luthier on Luthier, The Truth About Vintage Amps, The Truth About Recording and Mixing, and Sweep the Floor. So if your podcast library is looking a little barren, we have you covered with all sorts of geeky stuff. Beyond Martin Guitars and Carlton Cases, the Fretboard Journal podcast is brought to you by Folkway Music up in Canada, as well as Mono Cases, which are everywhere. So please go check out both of those brands. Let them know the Fretboard Journal steered you to them. And I don't have anything else to report. Again, the Milk Carton Kids Prologue is celebrating its 10th anniversary, and I'll include a link to this new fancy box set in our show notes. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. And here's my chat with Kenneth Pattingale and Joey Ryan. Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. 10 years. Can you imagine? What have you done the last 10 years?
Here's the thing that is weird about this. I'm sure you guys didn't feel this way, but I was like, it's only been 10 years? Because, I mean, your music, I'm not saying that as an insult. Your music is sort of like timeless. Your look has stayed the same. Like, you somehow had the wherewithal 10 years ago to figure out this amazing formula that has not changed much and is still as loved as it was back then. So I was like, it's only been 10. And then you take 2 years out for the pandemic. It's been like 8 years.
Yeah, that's true. I love that you, I'm going to try and hold on to that perception of it, because that makes me feel better than how I normally feel, which is that I cannot believe that it has already been 10 years. To me, we feel like a brand new band that's still like trying to find ourselves. That's how I feel.
Well, do you agree with that, Kenneth?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. Not really.
Why would you ask that question? The question you never ask is, do you agree with what Joey said?
No, like, I'm curious, so as not to disagree and just immediately set us off on a track. I would love to hear more of why Joey thinks we feel like a brand new band.
It just feels new. It's just startling to me when I think of, I think because it was like, maybe it's the ages that we started the band at, and you know, we started when we were like both about to be 30, and 10 years later we're both about to be 40. And I think in there maybe is a thing of your 30s where like it doesn't really feel like time's passing, whereas when I think about somebody who maybe heard Prologue when they were 15, like that person is like a lawyer now, and like they heard Michigan when they were in ninth grade, and now they're like a totally different phase of their life and a different person, and could, you know, when I think about that, it really trips me out.
I think maybe I've figured it out. I think it's different. I think there's a subtext Joey's not letting on about. It's just that in the last 10 years, we haven't accomplished much.
So oh, come on.
It just seems, it seems like nothing has changed really, you know, because he's still sort of like hustling and angling for his wants and needs. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
But isn't
but it is kind of whack that you celebrate 10 years. Like, shouldn't we have waited at least till 20 years or 25? 10 years is a very short time to be like, let us rejoice, luxuriate in the mountain of work we accomplished. It's like, it's only 10 years.
Yeah. That's why I say it's a depressing to think about it that way. That's why I like the way Jason said it, which is that it feels, maybe it even feels like longer than that, you know. Isn't the music that we all love the most the music that feels timeless? So maybe that's I'm gonna hold on to the way that you said it.
Okay, thank you.
Like if a 10-year-old wasn't a 10-year-old and needed the attention and the love and like some specialness imparted upon them, we wouldn't accomplish, like we wouldn't celebrate what they accomplished in the last 10 years. You know, they're not even in fourth grade. What have they done? Written a few book reports?
I think 10th grade. 10-year-olds are in fifth grade.
Yeah, they are. I can vouch for that. I have a fifth grader. Okay,
well, despite, it's not like we would throw a life celebration of them. It's not like we would all gather and talk about what they accomplished before the fifth grade. You wait till, you
know. I bet you had a big, beautiful birthday party for your kid.
Pure vanity. It was just vanity. As all children's birthdays are.
Well,
by the way, my dog's first birthday is like a month from now, and
I know
we're pulling out all the stops.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
It's a dog.
I know. Well, okay. So Prologue came out 10 years ago. We've established that.
Yeah.
And then, but right before that was that other retrospect, that earlier live album or what that you did in like Ventura. Something dramatic happened between those two things, and whatever happened when you walked into Prologue has sort of set this template that has been amazing and you've had a whole career with. What happened there? Like, what made you change your sound a little bit or how you view recording or playing? I'm just curious.
Well, you know, it's funny, right before I answer it seems to me like anybody who's written about this phenomenon gets it wrong, because I thought it was a very clear tongue-in-cheek, we name our project Retrospect, the thing that we're, you know, like, obviously it's the first thing we did together. It's not anything like that. So the only meaning that could be associated with it is like, here's some stuff that we're going to say goodbye to.
Sure.
And honestly, it's not, it's nothing other than a function of Joey and I started writing together. And so what you hear on Retrospect is what we didn't write together, and what you hear on Prologue for the first time is what we wrote together. Which actually in a music nerd kind of way is a very, interesting like case study or juxtaposition, because like we recorded those two albums 3 months apart, no, maybe 6 months apart. But like, had we recorded Prologue 6 months, it was just because we were busy. Like, had we recorded Prologue the day after we recorded Retrospect, it would have sounded virtually the same. And so that's like a band of two people who are amidst deep collaboration, and the only difference is between songs they wrote together and songs they didn't write together. And if that's the difference between a central part of our identity as a band, it's interesting that you can chalk it up to writing alone.
Wow.
'Cause that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. The only other thing that happened between the recordings of both albums was that we went on our first like proper tour as the Milk Carton Kids, which was opening for Joe Purdy. So when we recorded Prologue, it was like we took 4 days out of the 7 day break in the middle of like a 55 show tour. So we did have sort of the first 21 shows or so under our belt as Milk Carton Kids, playing those songs live, you know, that we had written together for Prologue. So
you'll remember,
I would say 99% agree that it's just that we wrote those songs together and everything else was songs that were our songs separately. And then
I will smudge out that 1% one day when we're brave enough with the two nights that we recorded in retrospect up in Ventura. We also used those shows as rehearsal for Prologue. And so what ends up on the retrospect album is live recordings of all of those things. But if you were at the concerts each night, you would have also heard Prologue in its entirety for the first time, because we were testing those on stage for the first time. And we have all of that recorded, and like, you they're not
the same.
Yeah. They're not fit for like a 10-year release, because we need to wait till we're a little older and like desperate for money, or just don't give a shit about how we sound, because there's some like, you know, there's some wolfy notes and some like, you know, we obviously needed to rehearse them, but the essence is there. Entirely, and the character that is then present on Prologue and beyond is absolutely there the same night that we recorded Retrospect.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was just wondering, when you said you had been on the road for a while opening, like, was there a marked difference between that first show's vibe and then the one right before Prologue? Like, did you figure out your pacing, the silent parts, the spacing and all that good stuff?
I think it was all arranged before then, but you know, it doesn't hurt to then rehearse 21 times in front of an audience, you know, even if you know where all those marks are.
And in front of real audience, better. Real audiences too, you know, we were playing our own shows at the time, had, you know, 20, 30, 40 people at them, and all of a sudden we were playing to a few hundred people. That does something a little bit different.
What do you guys remember about walking into the recording studio for Prologue? Like, did you know what you wanted the end result to be, or did it kind of evolve?
I think we knew.
Yeah. We hired our friend Eric Robinson, who's a great engineer and producer, to, you know, go into his studio, and he record the whole thing. And since we had been playing them for so long on the road, including just like every single night for the past 21 nights, probably what we would have said to ourselves is, let's just go in and play them like we're playing them on stage. Now, I do also remember that's probably not what happened, because I remember, for example, do you remember, Kenneth, we struggled with New York. We struggled to get like the tempo and the feel of New York, which we must have been playing every single night on stage. And then something, you know, there's something about the microscope of the microphones and the studio that for some reason made that one a difficult, you know, fish to land.
Catch a fish,
and then you got to land it. I mean, I feel like we had it on the hook, just to keep the metaphor going. It was the landing of it that was
keeping us. Oh, that's a fishing term.
Sure,
you've been out there fishing with all your folk music money.
I've been fishing long before I was a folk musician.
That's true.
I'm actually better at it than I am at
nice. Guitar. Well, that New York, the second version of New York we recorded, and I don't think I listened to. In fact, I did all the sort of curation for the material that's packed into this 10th year anniversary LP box set that we're talking about. And I guess on this call, I'm a little embarrassed to admit that I didn't bother listening to the alternate take of New York that was finished. We've got a bunch of other crazy goodies, but
from the studio.
From the studio, because I think you're right. I remember that, but I think we recorded it twice, right?
We must have recorded a bunch of times.
I think we recorded it on. Well, I mean, I think we recorded a version on the first day, finished it, and then at the end of the week was like, we need to record that again. But my guess is, if I pulled it up right now and listened to it, I bet it sounds exactly the same. I bet you we were just way into our own thing. Trying to get everything just right. And then, you know, that's my biggest takeaway from the perspective of 10 years, as you look back and all of those details that you were wrapped up in and consumed with and worried about, none of those actually matter. You don't even hear them. It's just sort of like the sum of all parts creates this sort of crude presentation of a thing that's new. And that's what actually gave its identity. And that's what maybe captured a listenership or captured an audience. And it's all of those small things that we thought were important. Maybe that's part of the process of getting there, but like they're kind of not important in the end.
I mean, you guys even had the guitar lineup figured out back then. Did you think about playing around with that? Or was it like, no, nope, these are the two guitars?
Oh, no, we knew that. We had a whole design on the whole thing, you know, whether or not it was the right thing. It's the right thing in the end. I love that. Those two guitars are part of the band. And at the time, and still to this day, Norik Rensen, who lives right down the hill here in Studio City, he watches after those guitars and makes sure they're sounding as they should and that Joey's battery doesn't die when he has a battery in it or whatever. And
now we put batteries in them.
Yeah, we put batteries. Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, Jason.
Well, back in them. You had a battery in it at the time.
Yeah, at the time. But then since we were just miking the guitars for many years, we didn't have any electronics in them at all.
Okay.
Somewhat recently, we've gone to a setup where we're using our one Edwina, which is Kenneth will probably tell a little bit more accurately exactly the ratio here, but you know, now it's the vocals just go through the Edwina, and probably 80% of what you hear of the guitars is coming through the Edwina, but we have wireless packs, transmitting a direct signal from each of the guitars to give a little boost there. So it's not pure. We're not purely into the one Edwina anymore, although we were for a few years. But that's for a variety of reasons, including ergonomics.
Ergonomics. Oh, you get to move around a little bit?
Move around less, actually. Kenneth in particular.
To avoid back pain and nerve pain.
Yeah.
Oh, it was from holding the guitar that close?
From playing it.
Yeah. Working the microphone in that way for those years turned out to be upsetting to the physique of men in their late 30s, more so than they were to us in our early 30s. And actually, we just did our first tour and we were up near you in Seattle. And because it was our first time on the road in 18 months. And after the third show, I was like in terrible pain all over my body. And I realized,
he's like, man, I got to go fishing.
Yeah. So you gotta get out of here, go fishing. I just realized I was standing funny. I was standing on one foot and holding my shoulder up all tense, and you start to have to pay attention to your musculoskeletal health when you get to be our age, Jason, I'm sad to say.
I understand completely. Do you guys rewatch your video of your performances and like critique them?
Like post show,
yeah.
Like watching debrief, film,
like a basketball player. Mm-hmm. No,
like a basketball.
No,
no, no. 30 for 30 with you guys.
No, you know what?
We have gone through some phases where we've done that, but they were short lived.
Early on, and like you're very familiar, unfortunately, with Joey and my adversarial nature, and. In the beginning of the band, there were times where we would get, if there was a board recording of the show, we'd listen to it the next day to sort of like shine light on what we might improve. But those sessions devolved into conversations that were, you know,
unproductive.
Yeah. 5% worthwhile and 95% incendiary.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it is something that probably we should do and probably everybody should do, because anytime I do listen back, you know, I always learn at least one thing about, the way something that I'm doing that's either working that I didn't realize or really not working.
Now, I was just thinking about it because you mentioned your posture. I was like, you would have pointed that out, I'm sure, or noticed. Yeah,
I guess we don't have video to look back on for most shows, but we usually have some audio recording.
Yeah. all the guitar nerds are going to be mad at me if I don't ask you what the pickup is that you guys decided on, because you obviously have an incredible guitar sound. So I'm sure you went through all the options.
Oh yeah. Trace Audio Amulet. Trace. I emailed that guy, or no, text messaged him once to invite him to the Santa Cruz show that we were playing. He did not want to come to the Wild Card Kids show.
Uh-huh.
But also, this is a good time for a shout out to our sound engineer, Jason Cupp, who's been with us for several years now, who I don't think we wouldn't be doing this sort of blended direct signal with the Edwina one mic thing if we didn't have such implicit trust, and also now years of just really good feedback from him and everyone else that we trust, that he's making it sound the way it's supposed to, using that sort of blended approach.
Yeah.
Also, with that said, those Trace Audio Amulets are like hands down the best sounding thing. It's crazy.
Yeah,
they're good. I don't know how much experience you or your viewers have with them, Jason, but they are, the only thing that you'd lose is like if you're, you know, Jackson Browne and playing the, you know, the stadiums or the United Center in Chicago or whatever. Although, side note, I think all of Jackson's guitars have amulets in them. When you're on that big of a stage, there's like a pretty significantly lower gain before feedback kind of deal with the Trace Audio, because they're acoustic lenses. They're not like a piezo under the bridge pickup, or they're not like a, you know, a neck pickup, like a single coil or a humbucker or anything. They're actual, like, they're kind of like the closest way to describe them without explaining the acoustic lens technology is like, it's basically like two kind of like boundary or proximity mics mounted to the bottom of the bridge plate. And so it's kind of this weird thing where it's like you're getting that a signal very directly to the closely to the source of the sound, but without using a microphone per se. It's almost like a contact mic. So you get this really natural thing, and it feeds back a little sooner, but not like, we've played pretty large shows with them without any kind of problem. But they sort of work in a place where if you put a 57 in front of them, in front of a real noisy festival crowd, that's not going to fly. Whereas these things sound like your guitar.
Got it. You mentioned your guitar tech. As two guys who are taking vintage guitars out on the road for a decade, do they need a lot of work, or have they been pretty rock steady?
Pretty solid, actually. I can't remember, Joey, if yours, not
my,
really.
Your J45 seems to be hanging on by a thread, but it has seemed to be hanging on by a thread for about 12 years now. And so I think it has just settled into some sort of decrepit malformity.
Yeah, and also Norik, and then like three other people who come across it all with knowledge, including like Mark Stutman, whatever. Every single one of them was like, oh, both of these braces are about to fall off. Like, they're not.
Yeah, Stutman told me, so he freaked me out like 7 years ago. He was like, this is, I don't know how this, you're playing. It's like, this is going to fall. This is going to like just separate from the braces any second. It like kind of already was. And nothing has happened since then. So you were wrong. Or maybe, I'm sure he was right, but it's somehow it's working. because it's also so steady. Like, I'll take, if for whatever reason, if I'm, you know, sitting around at home playing other guitars and I've left the guitar in the case for a month since we got home from the road, like, it'll be in tune. We fly to Australia. It's in tune when we land. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Rock solid.
I don't even know. Kenneth and I have had like tofu scrambles and talked about his guitar collection. Do you have much of a guitar collection?
No, not really. I have a few that I've acquired in different circumstances, usually for free somewhere along the line, that I like how they sound.
Do you even have them? You don't?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
Martin has given me a couple.
The list totals four, right?
I don't even know.
I think Joey has four instruments.
All right. I have a Washburn on the guitar behind
and
me.
And I don't think he's bought a single one of them. Maybe the Washburn you bought.
No, that was for free also from Washburn. Oh.
I don't think you've ever bought a guitar, have you?
I bought a Guild. My first guitar was a Guild. That
in what year? Well, not like the guitar.
Not my first guitar, but the guitar that I bought when I was like going to try and be a musician.
Yeah.
That would have been 2004.
Wow.
Right. But then he has never bought an instrument since.
My main guitar was a gift from a fan.
Yep.
My banjo, which is a Romero, which I love, it's a custom Romero, which I called them to buy. I placed the order and thought I was buying it. And then they told me it was going to take a year because that's how long it takes. And then 2 months later, it showed up for my birthday because it turned out Kenneth had gone behind my back and just told them that he was buying it for me for my birthday and to not tell me about it. So Kenneth surprised me with my Romero banjo as a birthday gift. And I have a couple Martins, which are on some sort of permanent loan from Martin. Mm-hmm. If they see this, maybe they'll remember and ask for them back. But otherwise, no, I just...
You still have Joe Henry's really nice guitar hanging on the wall?
Yeah, I have Joe recently moved and was, you know, offloading some of his guitars for storage in friends' houses and, you know, storage in use. So I've got a really old, one of the pre-wars from him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I need to buy a guitar.
He's bought a guitar.
You're like the guy who traded the paperclip up the food chain till he got a house.
Yeah, that describes his entire life. That's his existence.
I don't know that story, but that did happen to me. That's how I got this house, actually.
See? You lived it.
Paperclip. No,
it was an early internet thing.
I do have some sort of a blessed existence, like, and it's the opposite of Kenneth's. I think that I actually take all of Kenneth's luck and kismet in life. Like, I think it was 2017 when by June we had flown like 43 flights, and Kenneth, being a spreadsheet obsessive, called me and was like, "We can't do any more flights." I was like, "Why? I love flying. What's the problem?" And he's like, "We've taken 43 flights this year, and 27 of my flights have not gotten me to my destination on the day that I was supposed to arrive." Like, he just ends up spending the night at airport hotels because something happens with the plane or the crew or something. So, and I'm like, I once got on the only American Airlines flight out of New York during the snowpocalypse. This is my flight luck, and I got upgraded to first class too.
And they gave him a guitar at the end of it. The end here, sir. I do. Three more Martin for you.
I feel a little bit bad about it at this point.
I hope you enjoyed your little warm naps.
So
you know, so free complimentary warm nuts.
I know, yeah.
First, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He knows them too well.
Says he lives on them up until the pandemic. Then he had to figure out what his real diet was.
So going back to the deluxe edition, what's in it?
Oh yeah.
I'll circle back for you guys.
Yeah. It's actually really cool. The first thing that happened was I remastered it.
Okay.
Which I think 10 years on, the new master will play more appropriately, both for what I think is more people listening in headphones than ever. Hmm. And also I think more people have better invested in hi-fi listening scenarios, where this new master, basically the big difference.
Like, there was a vinyl master before, but now you're...
Yeah, but the big difference is I backed off a bit and gave the whole record a little more dynamic range, so that when you're listening to it in its splendor and its glory, you get a little more of the life and the dance and whatever. So that's exciting for anybody that wants to check out the remaster. But then the second LP, we have spread across the other two LPs, there's a representation, a different version of literally every track that appears on the original album, whether it be like a writing demo or a live version or a early version with different lyrics or something. You know, there's some example of every other track And specifically with Michigan and New York, we like zoom in real close on those. And like side A of disc two is five different versions of Michigan, which go from literally the first like voice memo that Joey sent me after he wrote the song through, like we had our phone recording just for, you know, like while we were hashing out the song, just so that if something cool happened, we could remember it. And there's, I think Michigan goes from that to the very first time we played it on stage. I have a board recording of that. So we kind of take you through that, and then a similar progression on New York also, which I've never seen it done on a box set. I think it's pretty cool for That's people cool. that are really interested in our songs and, you know, how they might have gotten to where they got. I think it'll be a cool thing. And then disc three is just all the goodies of sort of like, you can listen through that and hear the rest of the album in its various unshaped, rough form, where you hear us talking a little bit about it. And, you know, like I said, some live performances. So that's the musical content, which took not only a while to put together, but the thing I was most happy with was that we had an abundance of material, and this represents sort of what we thought, if not was the most interesting, at least told some sort of story about the early part of our band. It wasn't like we gathered together everything that we had and then threw it on out of necessity because it's all we had. Like, we really actually got to curate and pick things that we thought were special and worth people's time and money, which felt super cool. And then we did the same thing with the packaging, where I'm a bit of a digital hoarder, and also reached out to both our fans and a few, we know a few people behind the scenes who are sort of avid Milk Carton Kids ephemera collectors, and compiled a bunch of old like concert tickets and posters and photos, and also sort of tried to paint a picture of what 10 years ago in our lives looked like. And all of that accompanied by a 7,000 word essay we commissioned from Kim Rule, who, for those who don't know Kim, is a celebrated and accomplished former editor of No Depression and music writer and folk music expert. And we called her up and said, "Hey, we're going to do this thing that's entirely about us. Would you please help make it feel a little less funny? And like, would you write an essay about sort of where folk music was at, where like when we came on the scene, just as like as some sort of contextualizing thing?" And very generously, Kim not only did that, but then made it a little more about us than probably we wanted it to be. But in the end, we read it and we're grateful for it because, you know,
she revised us out of it a little bit at our request.
Yeah.
That's your box set.
Yeah.
So that is, did I miss anything, Joey? I think that's what's in it.
No, that's everything. Yeah.
The essay
The essay by Kim is really beautiful thing to, because I think 2010 when we started was like kind of this weird, it might be the exact like nadir point of the music industry, where like there was no streaming yet and there was no sales anymore. That's why we came along and did our, you know, gave our thing away for free, and it felt totally natural. It was like it you know, there were no options, you know. It just, it was, not only was it the, maybe you could say it was the Wild West, but it was like worse than that. It wasn't like there was a lot of options to choose from. I felt like there were no options, which is kind of why we just gave our thing away for free and went on tour, which somehow ended up working. But it was really interesting to have another person who's paying attention, you know, really offer her perspective on that whole timeline. You know, like it's also the end of MySpace and the beginning of Twitter. It was a big time of transition, and there was kind of nothing. It was like a wasteland, which was felt fun at the time, actually.
Yeah,
for us.
Speaking of giving stuff away, I'm looking at Spotify here on my phone. Michigan is your most streamed song with currently 52,668,000 streams. Did you guys know going into those sessions that like that would be the song that folks would lock into?
No.
Yeah, not really. I mean, we knew very quickly that that would be the perennial favorite, but we didn't like take it for granted. We didn't hear that and then like famously declare that's a number
and
one.
famously and still regrettably, neither did anyone around us or that we were working with, because it's a 5.5 minute breakup dirge. And so like any, you know, the independent radio promoter that we hired and even our publicist who did a wonderful, wonderful job for us. It was, you know, it was like kind of her first project and our first project as she was young and like she did great, but like nobody was like, oh yeah, let's really push out this 5.5 minute, like depressing ballad. So I think that that song, to the extent that it caught on and became a favorite, like really did so against it didn't get any help from us or really anyone else.
Just people were breaking up independently and needed a soundtrack to their lives. Yes.
That's right.
But it is a funny thing, like, especially as, you know, right now in late September 2021, we're getting ready to go into the studio to make our whatever it is, 7th album, I think is the way we count it. At this point in the process, you always sort of, there's so many question marks that you want answers to. And obviously they're like, they can't be answered. Like, will this project come together? Will it be good? Will we put it in the right order? Will fans like it? Will it have the intended effect on fans? Could we have done better? You know, like all of these things that you just don't know until after the process. And it is funny sort of reminiscing back specifically on Michigan, just one day that song popped up and it was like, whatever it did, I think the biggest consequence it had in our life was it probably replaced some other song in our live set that fulfilled a similar purpose. And we were like, oh, that one's better. So here it goes. And obviously like people liked it and it became a crowd favorite, and the people around us always, you know, would remark on what a special song that was. But in the moment, like we, you know, it just felt like, oh, we were, you know, as a songwriter, your job is to write a song and throw it in the pile.
We were writing
and do it
songs.
And write another one. Because the last thing you want is to have your entire career revolve around one thing. And so in that moment, it's sort of like it came in very quickly. We were in the midst of writing that album and trying to figure out our identity, and then very quickly went into rotation as we moved on to finding the next thing. And it is funny that 10 years later, it's like not only such an enduring thing, but like we've never been loath to play it on stage. It's a, like a wonderful song that's always fun to perform and always fulfills a purpose in our set. And people sing it along with us, and you know, many tens of millions of people around the world have enjoyed it and continue, and it's made us lots of money, and it's, you know, it's like, cool.
Can I confess one thing is that I hope that people, if anyone's watching this and then comes to our shows, I hope that you actually won't be influenced by knowing this, but I don't like it when the audience sings along to this song.
Well,
because it's very sad and lonely and desolate. And when a big group of people sing it, it sounds triumphant. And I just don't like it as much.
Got it.
But I hope that everyone keeps singing along, because people like to sing. And if that's what you're there for, then great. I just know that I hate it.
Awesome.
You're ruining my song. No, just kidding.
Do you guys have to run, or do you have one more time?
Yeah, go.
Go for it.
Okay. Since you are about to go into the recording studio, what can you tell us at this point about that? Is there a estimated time of arrival for this album, or a different theme or different
due
sound
date?
Or anything? Yeah, is there a due date?
Well, I shipped many, many things from Nashville to Los Angeles. They arrived this morning.
Okay.
So audio gear and instruments.
So it's not just the two guitars. There's that.
And it might just be the two guitars.
It might just be the two guitars. We might ask for our money back on the shipment at some point. On the shipping charges. I don't think we can get those back.
Joey never pays for shipping either. He just gets
You just call them. You just ask nicely. They always give you a refund. In my experience, I don't know.
The other thing is that, yeah, like I think December 1st, we'll be done with it.
Okay.
And so
one way or the other,
you know, I don't know how long
it'll be
takes.
Done with us.
It'll be done with us. I don't know if it's like, you know, if we were 10 years younger and really raring to go, we'd finish an album and then we'd force everybody to put it out as quickly as possible. We wouldn't take no for an answer and it would be out within a few weeks and blah, 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 off to the races. But now in our infinite wisdom, we will finish the album on December 1st and we will send it to one person and they will tell us what to do with it. So I don't know if that means it'll come out in the spring of next year or the fall of next year, or the summer. But
we got a wonderful team together with our management and 30 Tigers. We're putting it out through, you know, our label with 30 Tigers. And so we're going to follow their lead on, we're going to follow their, and our infinite wisdom, we're going to just follow their infinite wisdom.
But I think that means 2022. And hopefully it's accompanied by a triumphant return to live music post pandemic. Yeah. Know, hopefully a global tour.
Yeah.
Post pandemic triumphant return. That's the hope anyway.
Yeah.
We just had a taste of it the first time, a short tour around the West Coast. And it was so lovely to be back in front of people playing music that, as if we'd forgotten that that's one of the most important parts of our job. Of course it is, but it just makes the prospect of going and doing it with new music that we're passionate about and something else to share, like, even more exciting.
Yeah. Where was the first show of that tour, that little one you just did?
Phoenix, Arizona. Two nights at the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix, Arizona, where you can buy little tchotchkes like this.
All right. Joey got them for free.
This is what the new album will sound like, yeah. Joey got them for free, for sure.
Yeah, I already have this.
So I was going to say, was it a weird emotional thing to be back on stage? That's not the venue I would think that would necessarily be the most emotional venue, but maybe it was. I don't know.
Oh, well, first of all, that theater is wonderful. We've done a lot of shows there now, and there is something really cool about being there. It, you know, it is like part of a big institution.
Yeah.
So when you're in the building, it feels like you're in a museum, because you are, but the theater's beautiful. It's immaculate sounding. It's got a lot of character still. So first of all,
music fans, Lowell has cultivated real music fans in Phoenix to come there.
Yeah. They have, that's right. It's a venue that has its own fan base based on the shows that it books, which is always a wonderful thing, because you feel like really part of you're stepping into an existing community, which is a good feeling. I personally got a little bit emotional in about the second song of the first show, but only fleetingly. The thing that I think was more lasting for me across the whole tour was I felt everyone we came across, including audience members, you know, venue employees, promoters, I felt like everyone was really only doing it because of the deepest, most important reasons to be doing it. Mm-hmm. Because everyone knows that you could cancel if you don't feel comfortable. Everyone knows that you might have to cancel if anyone gets sick at any moment. And that the only reason to be doing it now is because we feel like we need to be playing music and we feel like people need to be hearing music. And the only reason to come to the show and put yourself at whatever level of elevated risk is because you want to be a part of that. And you want to hear, you basically need to be hearing music. And so just on the, you know, the deepest, most important reasons why anyone does this or participates in this whole touring circus in the first place, that was the only thing left. Everything else was stripped away. And so there was kind of a weighty sense of importance about it, which paradoxically gave it like a lightness, because it felt optional for everyone, which means we all really wanted to be there.
Beautiful. I love it. I know a little bit about, from talking to Kenneth earlier, this, you're recording this record in a undisclosed bunker, and you're booking it for a longer term than most people book studios for, because it's a little different setup. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you have songs already kind of in your heads, or are you just going into this space and seeing what happens over the course of a month or two?
I said that to somebody else in the last few days, and they said, what are you guys making, rumors or something? And I was like, don't be a jerk.
No, we'll tell you exactly where we're going to be and the address too, if anyone wants to stop by.
Okay.
No, it's a studio out in Burbank. We have some songs. I think we have a lot of songs, some of which are probably finished. A lot of which are, you know, in various states of uncompletion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll write new songs as well, because it's like an 8 or 9 week window. So the one thing that we've never done is gone into the studio and ended up with only the songs on the record that we went in with. Even when we went in with a complete record ready to go, done, which is with the first three albums we did were that way, we always wrote new songs in the process that ended up on the record. So this time we don't want to be unprepared, but I think we want to leave time and space for that sort of inevitability.
Sure.
And lean into that more too.
Well, and also our last effort, what I'll call it, The Only Ones, the EP we made, is also the first time we went in, well, with the exception of the band record, but it's different. But The Only Ones is also the first time we went in like not having fully arranged songs, you know, with Monterey and Ash and Clay and Prologue. Like, those things were done before we ever hit record. Like
stage ready.
You mentioned earlier, all the spaces, all of the moments, all of the things had been defined, and it was just a matter of like following the map and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And with The Only Ones, all of the songs were finished, but we allowed ourselves to kind of arrange them for the duo in the studio, which was a new process. And actually, like, both the, you know, it was only a small fraction frustrating as it was like rewarding, which is a good balance in the studio. If you're doing that, then you end up coming out of it with something that you wanted. And the band record also, like, we had worked out all of the arrangements as a duo, knowing sort of what the band had to do. And so that also felt sort of like the earlier album. Whereas this one, it's the first time we've given ourselves enough time and space as to figure out what those beats are, like, in real time with recording, like with microphones recording. And so my hope is that, like, it takes us just down a different path of making an album and reveals a different side of what we're good at.
Yeah.
Because that's all of the ways we've done it in the past is a very prescribed way of doing things that is, you know, it's very mindful of the music and the music we make, but also is extra mindful of the money we spend and the time it takes and, you know, all the other factors that are involved in this career. Whereas this one, like, I like to think, you know, I hope that despite having a big, vast time in the studio, I really hope that on this album, there's a song that's just Joey playing a guitar and singing. And, you know, I don't think that would ever happen if we had like a to-do list of things to get done in 3 days and had a whole design on things. I imagine the song that could end up with just being Joey with a guitar and a voice on the album is something we might try a number of ways and realize that actually the best way it communicates its message is just that simply. But, you know, we've never given ourselves a studio experience to ever find out if that's true. 'Cause you probably want to hear the things, you know, you don't want to just record Joey alone and take for granted that that's the best thing. You need some evidence that it is. So you know, we have to compile the evidence.
Control group.
I have a lot of evidence from the past that that's not going to be the best way, but we'll see what happens when we get there.
Final question, you guys.
Also,
go ahead.
I say just because it's a career highlight and a real coup and personal win. The other big distinction is this is the first Milk Carton Kids that will ever be produced by Kenneth Pattingale. Oh. I finally got Joey to agree to that, even though many of the others were produced by Kenneth Pattingale, but then had, you know, produced by the Milk Carton Kids in name and spirit. This is the first time he's relinquished that control and understood that it's like paramount to his career path to make this important decision. So that also should make a huge difference.
You want that Grammy podium for yourself.
Yeah.
Well,
the best part of hiring a producer is that you can fire them. So it does put me in a good position that I've never been in before.
You guys, your songwriting, obviously the power of it is the intimacy and you guys collaborating. We talked about that earlier, but have you been able to do collaborative songwriting through this pandemic? I know you guys don't live anywhere near each other, or you haven't until recently. Do you do these Zoom calls and like try to work out new material, or it's a lost cause?
Not over Zoom. We've gotten together a bunch of times in person. We have been in like half the time of these 18 months we've been in the same city.
Okay.
We've gotten together a bunch of times to show each other what we were working on and had some, I don't know, I guess relatively unproductive days, some more than others, maybe got some good work done on some of the days and made some progress. But the collaborative thing for us has always, you know, I always, the easiest way to say it is we really try not to sit down together with a blank page. So there's got to be something there that we're working on. So I think we're both just getting as many unblank, what is it? As many pages together that are no longer blank to bring into the studio and do all of our most of our collaborating there. We've done some work, but most of the collaborative writing and then arranging and performing is all slated for studio.
You know, the other big thing that's maybe as interesting and maybe as depressing is 10 years on, back then, Joey and I were very eager to spend our time and energy in starting this career in music that we really wanted. And here we are 10 years later with like we have many of those things that we wanted. And so it's a lot harder to get us out of the house to hang out with each other because, you know, we have fans that will listen to an album when we put it out and they'll buy, we don't have to spend 120 days on the road building the fan base. I mean, we arguably should still to keep growing that, to make sure that they still stick around. But, you know, that said, so much of the fire when it started was this like need to not prove something, but to, you know, accomplish something and get it done. And, you know, now we're 10 years on and we have, very luckily a successful career compared to a lot of the people that have spent hours and years and sweat and tears trying to carve out a career in music. Like that's not a given. And so we're really lucky that it still persists, but it also means that like, we can take a little bit of that for granted as Joey raises his children and as I try to keep a fresh dog from tormenting me and
got fishing to do
and mother's fishing to do.
Yeah.
Fresh dog.
So yeah, he's 11 months. Pretty fresh.
Pretty fresh. Fresh dog.
What kind of dog?
He's a terrier mix.
Okay.
His name's Howdy.
I was going to ask if there was a music related name for the dog. But
oh, no, yeah. Like banjo or
Django. I've met a lot of Djangos.
Oh, Django, yeah.
Django's probably the most popular dog name among guitar nerds, I would say.
Do you think that it's right? I guess you're mostly like I wonder if you like ended up at a like a Quentin Tarantino festival, would you meet just as many Django dogs? But I'm sure you're only talking to the Django Reinhardt fans.
I think so. I never ask. I just take it for granted. It's like the Fido of this generation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
nice.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That was my chat with the Milk Carton Kids. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. It helps let others find our little show. Till next time.